We survived Hurricane Harvey, right? You know, the folks down south of us, I think it's hard for us to comprehend what they're going through. You've seen some of the reports of the cities being covered with water, with churches being devastated. There have been complaints made that they should have been more prepared. How do you prepare for that much water? I don't think there's any way to do it. Governor Abbott has declared today to be a statewide day of prayer. He was flanked by Mike Pence on one side and Franklin Graham on the other when he made that declaration. I was notified early in the week, and then toward the end of the week, our President Donald Trump declared this a national day of prayer for the folks down in South Texas. So at the end of this service today, I want to be sure and leave time, we're going to close. Mike Northam, who is more of a mover and shaker in the disaster relief effort than you may realize. He's called the White Hat. He's kind of the general of the South. He's going to come in and lead us, flanked by many of the disaster relief folks that were here. We're going to honor that request, and we're going to pray for them. Although it pales in comparison, we were not untouched by the flood. Those of you that were here last week will know that this altar area up here flooded, and our guys water vacked it all up for the worship service, and I sat in here on the front row, and while I was sitting on the front row, that water seeped back in. My feet were in water, and this entire area up here was covered with water again. But we have been victorious. Our maintenance facilities crew almost worked around the clock, vacuuming the water up over and over and over again, then vacuuming it and having fans, and you can't even tell. So we owe a great debt of gratitude to Alan Shryock, Colin Busby, John Grimes, Glenn Walker, their wives, and other volunteers. We thank you all so very much. It just looks great. And I know this is only a result of a great deal of work on your part. What I want to do this morning and next week is take some time, look at a passage with which we are very familiar, Matthew chapter 9, beginning in verse 35. We recognize this, of course, as the passage from which we launched into our Community Connect ministry. Now, excuse me, we suspended that ministry over the summer because of the brutal heat. We were going out at 5 o'clock right at the moment of the greatest heat, but now the summer is over-ish. You know, the calendar says that we're coming to the end, although the thermometer doesn't say that. We're coming to the close of it. So it's such a tremendously important ministry, and we've been talking about doing this ever since May and June when we suspended. We've been talking about doing this. I want to return to that passage and spend some time in there again. And what I want to do this morning, and you need to kind of brace yourself, is I want to try to encourage you again and inspire you again to get behind this ministry in any way you can, physically, through prayers, financially. I want to inspire you to get behind this because it's such a great, great work. We're going to go back out into the communities beginning next Sunday night. But follow along with me beginning in Matthew chapter 9, verse 35. I'll tell you more about this passage as we wade into it. Then Jesus went to all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and every sickness. When he saw the crowds, he felt compassion for them because they were weary and worn out. The NIV says, helpless and harassed, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, these 12 men who are staying down here, the harvest is abundant, but the workers are few. Therefore, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. You know, you hear in there this assignment, and this is an unusual assignment that has texture, it has layers, it has partitions, all of them being important to us. Jesus has given us an assignment unlike any other. But I want to say this, it is a low-risk assignment as far as we're concerned. It's not overwhelming. It is a pleasant assignment. It's a rewarding assignment. It's an assignment for which we need no training. It's an assignment for which Jesus is just depending upon our God-given personalities and our time, of course, although very, very little time. When I was in the seminary, I took a course on Roman Catholicism. And I took the course because I knew nothing about Roman Catholicism. And so I went into this course intimidated. I went into this course with much trepidation, not knowing what to expect. One of the assignments, and we were told this in our syllabus to begin the course, was sometime during the semester we were to interview a knowledgeable Catholic, not just the next door neighbor. We were to interview a knowledgeable Catholic and write up our interview, and based upon how detailed our interview and how well-spoken was our write-up, we would receive a grade, and the grade carried a great deal of weight in this course. So I went ahead and just bit the bullet, and right away I called and set up an interview with the largest Catholic church in Fort Worth. I guess you called that the Fort Worth Diocese. Is that right? I set up an interview with the Minister of Education, the person responsible for all the education in the diocese. I thought, who can be more knowledgeable than this woman? So I went that day with my notebook in hand. I thought, well, here I am, a Southern Baptist boy, born and raised Southern Baptist. All I know is Southern Baptist. I'm going into this Catholic church. I hope they don't burn me at the stake, you know, when I walk in. But I want to tell you something. I was shocked. This woman was the most pleasant, the most congenial, the most receptive, the most helpful woman. In fact, she believed in the plan of salvation. I'm not going to go into all this, but I'm just going to say to you, by the time we got the end of the interview, I said, you know what? You're not Catholic, you're Southern Baptist. And all I'm saying to you is this. This is my point. My point is I faced an assignment that was very intimidating to me, but as I moved into it, I want to say to you, this was very rewarding and very enlightening, and I've never forgotten it. We have an assignment that is intimidating. I know it's intimidating, but I just want to say to you, folks, if we'll just embrace it and move into it, and I'm speaking to every one of you, this is such a delightful, such a pleasant, such a non-intimidating, such a rewarding assignment. It'll shock you. It'll shock you. So, this week and next week, put on your shield of resistance, you know. Brace yourself, because I'm going to do the best I can to inspire you to buy into this. You got your resistance up? Uh-uh, Pastor, you're not going to convince me. Get it up tough. Because here I come. Let's look at this assignment. First of all, as we think about this assignment, I want to say to you that our assignment, let's talk about our assignment's harvest. And those of you who were here a year and a half ago when we started this is going to be, some of it's going to be a bit of a review for you. For others, it won't be. In verse 37, Jesus refers to the harvest, and we have to ask the question, who was he talking about? It's right here that we need a little bit of context. Jesus, we believe, preached his very first sermon called the Sermon on the Mount, documented in Matthew chapter 5 through 7. We believe he preached that very first sermon sitting on a hillside there by the Sea of Galilee. And then beginning in Matthew chapter 8, probably through chapter 10 or a little bit beyond, is what we call his early Galilean ministry, where he spent time there in Galilee. It's an area, not a town, but it's an area, a very small county, probably didn't cover much more area than the area of Pflugerville here, or maybe the area of Austin. And he began this, what we call his early Galilean ministry. Now, at the beginning of this chapter, chapter 9, verse 1, we see Jesus traveling to Capernaum. That's a village in the center of Galilee. There in verse 1, it's called his own city. And he uses Capernaum as his home base, kind of spiderwebbing out from Capernaum to all these villages and towns there in Galilee, referred to there in verse 35 of our passage. So as Jesus looked at the crowds of people who were gathering to hear him there in those small villages, verse 36, if you're following along with me, says there was something about these people that broke his heart. Now stay with me. I hope you have your Bibles open. In verse 36, as you're looking at it there, what was it about these people that broke Jesus' heart? Let me help you. They were weary and worn out. Or the NIV says they were hurting and helpless. He has this Galilean ministry going on. He's going out into these villages, and everywhere he goes, people gather, but he looks at them, and while he's preaching the gospel, yes, he's doing that, still he's looking in the eyes and the souls and the spirits of these people, and he's moved because they're broken. They're hurting. They're weary. They're worn out. So Jesus used the word harvest as a metaphor. The harvest is folks who are weary and worn out. Now, the image of people who are weary and worn out is an image that's dominated our televisions now for the last week, or at least a week, perhaps even more. The hurricane didn't do nearly the damage in the windfall as it did with the tropical storm that followed and dumped rainfall on these poor people. Some areas experienced as much as 49.5 inches, almost 50 inches of rain. People, that's 4 feet of water. So some of these people had 4 feet of water drop on them out of the sky. How do you prepare for 4 feet of water? And that's just the water that fell out of the sky. What about all the rivers and streams that fell up here in Austin and went rushing down that direction? Overflowing dams and levees and banks, and that was in addition to the water that fell on them from the sky. So it got as high in some places as 6, 7, and 8 feet. How does anybody prepare their house for 7 feet of water? Is your house protected for 7 feet of water? It can't be done. They tried. They tried best they could. Those folks tried to, but they just couldn't. They couldn't. And so now the television is full of the faces of these people who've lost everything. They've lost their homes, their cars, you know, their pets, generations of family photos. They've lost their computers. They've lost their computer files. They've lost their cats, their dogs. In some cases, they lost their lives. They've lost everything, is my point. So we can look at the screen, and it's still there, by the way, it's still going on. We can see the faces of these people and understand what it looks like to be weary and worn out, broken and exhausted, hurting and harassed. We see it. But we don't have to look at South Texas to find people who are weary and worn out. They're everywhere. Being weary and worn out is a state of mind. You know, if we want to talk to somebody who's weary and worn out, let's talk to somebody who's just lost a loved one. You know, the pain is never ending. They wake up in the morning and it hurts. They take a nap and wake up and it hurts. You've been there. You've lost loved ones. Every direction you turn, there's no escape from the pain and the hurt and the heartache. And they're not in South Texas. They're right here around us. Or talk to someone who's going through a divorce. I heard it said one time, at least in death, death is clean. But with a divorce, your spouse is still right there with you. Still there. You can't escape the presence of it. So somebody going through a divorce cannot get away from the hurt, the heartache, the pain, the suffering. They're exhausted by it. Someone who loses a job, the company for whom they work downsizes, and they're out. Who pays the mortgage? Who makes the car payment? Who pays the water, the utility? How do those things get paid? I'm looking into the eyes of people I know who've experienced this. You're kind of having flashbacks right now, aren't you? Financial problems. You know, the outflow is greater than the inflow, and you think to yourself, how did I get here? What did I do wrong? How am I going to feed my family? And on and on and on and on. I'm just saying to you, the harvest is all around us. It's in that block, down that street, over here, over there, everywhere, right here. The harvest is hurting people everywhere. We're surrounded by a harvest of the weary and worn out right here in Pflugerville. Jesus knows it, whether we know it or not. Dissecting our assignment, here's another thing. Let's look at our assignments, workers. In verses 37 and 38, Jesus refers to the workers. Who are these workers to whom he's referring? And what does Jesus expect the workers to do? Well, we know that Jesus never expected the 12 disciples to be the workers. We know that because he was speaking to the 12 disciples when he said there in verse 38, pray, you guys, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into the harvest. The primary job of these 12 disciples was to pray that God send the real harvesters out. That was their job. Later on, Luke chapter 10, verse 1, Jesus repeated his training by sending out 70 more to minister to the weary and worn out. We know that Jesus never expected the 70 followers to be the workers. We know that because he was speaking to these 70 followers when he said this in Luke chapter 10, verse 2. Pray to the Lord, in other words, you all, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. So the primary job of these 70, their primary job was to pray. Pray for the real workers, whoever they are, pray for the real workers so they can come out and tend to the harvest. You know where I'm going with this, don't you? I can see in your eyes. He's tightening this noose. Jesus demonstrated through the disciples what he wanted his future workers to do. Jesus demonstrated through the 70 followers what he wanted the future followers, workers to do. But Jesus always expected us, not them, to be his workers. And then the all-important question is, okay, what does he expect the workers to do exactly? Well, we're not going to look at it this morning, but chapter 10 contains the instructions Jesus gave to the disciples, instructions that are to serve primarily to guide us, not them. They were just the demonstrators. Let's look briefly here at chapter 10, verse 7. This is kind of the general overall instruction statement. As you go, Jesus said, announce this, the kingdom of heaven has come near. But that's not all of it. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those with skin diseases, drive out demons. For you have received free of charge, give free of charge. If I might just paraphrase what Jesus is expecting, Jesus expects us to find and minister to the weary and worn out. No strings attached. No expectations from them. Nothing required from them. We've received his blessings free of charge. We're to give his blessings free of charge. Can you remember any time in your life when you felt not just felt, when you were totally helpless? Has there ever been a time in your life when you were just empty, you were just void, you had nothing left to give? You ever gone through anything like that? You were just spent. No more spiritual energy, no more spiritual strength, nothing emotionally to give. You were just at rock bottom, and if anything was going to happen, somebody had to come from the outside and intercede and help you. Have you ever been there? Maybe some of you haven't. Maybe some of you live such a charmed life, you've never been there. I don't know how to communicate this to you. Totally helpless on our own. A man named Brandon Cook was visiting his grandmother in a New Hampshire hospital. There was a Panera Cafe across the street. Let me just read this letter he posted on the Panera Facebook page. My grandmother is passing soon with cancer. I visited with her the other day, and she was telling me about how she really wanted soup, but not the hospital soup, because she said it tasted awful. She went on about how she would really like some clam chowder from Panera. Unfortunately, Panera only sells clam chowder on Friday. I called the manager, Sue, told her the situation. I wasn't looking for anything special, just a bowl of clam chowder. Without hesitation, she said absolutely she would make her some clam chowder. When I went to pick it up, she wound up giving me a box of cookies as well. It's not that big a deal to most, but to my grandma, it meant a lot. I really want to thank Sue and the rest of the staff from Panera in Nashua, New Hampshire, just for making my grandmother happy. Thank you so much. I don't know if Sue was a Christ follower or not. I want to believe she was. But she knew what it meant to minister to someone who's in need. She knew what it meant to give a little bit of herself in order to help somebody who had nothing to give in return. Folks, we have so much, don't we? Not just finances, but you got a house, you got a vehicle, you may even have two, you got TVs, you know. This could just go on and on and on. We've got time. Think about the time we have. Think about the time we have that we invest in so many, many things, so many, many things. It didn't take much of Sue's time to scare up some clam chowder and give away some cookies, but it meant everything to this woman. It meant everything to this dying woman. The workers Jesus asked the disciples to pray for is us. The workers Jesus asked the disciples to pray for, the 70 disciples, was us. Not to sacrifice life and blood and loved ones is not what we're being asked to sacrifice. All we're being asked to do is spend a little time working on behalf of the weary and worn out. That's all. That's all. Just a little bit, just a tiny little bit. Really, I'm going to talk to you later about how tiny this is. Just a tiny, tiny little bit. Do a lot of good. Time is passing here. Finally, let's look at our assignment's blessing. I'm interested in this last statement, verse 8. You have received free of charge. Give free of charge. Give free of charge because you've received free of charge. Receive what free of charge? What had they received free of charge that they could now give free of charge? What did they receive free of charge that they now had within their power to give free of charge? Well, embedded in this transaction of being blessing to others is the idea that when we bless others, we also receive a blessing. Do you believe that? I don't know, Pastor. It's almost lunchtime. Can you just hurry up here? I'm kind of... I told you about the selfless actions of Sue there at Panera Cafe in Nashua, New Hampshire. Here's the rest of that story. Within days, that short post received more than 800,000 likes. More than 35,000 people took time to write Facebook messages commending that cafe. The next quarter, sales at that same store increased 28%. The quarter after that, the sales of that cafe had increased 34%. For businesses, is there a cause between blessing and blessed? I don't know. I'm not here to say there is. But there appears to be. There appears to be in business, there appears to be a blessing between benevolence and business. There appears to be. It was true for them. But I know there's a direct blessing in the lives of individuals when they seek to bless others. I know that. Listen to this. In a study of 132 patients with multiple sclerosis, researchers conducted an experiment. They formed two groups. One group was taught coping skills in a classroom setting. The individuals in the second group met monthly with mentors who also had MS to receive individual support and encouragement. Results were surprising. Which group do you think experienced the most results? Dead even. Both groups experienced about the same benefit, but that group of half a dozen mentors with MS who met with other MS patients to encourage them and to support them, their health shot up. The ones who were the mentors received way more of a blessing by helping than those who were helped. This is scientific. The main researcher said this: these people had undergone a spiritual transformation that gave them a refreshed view of self. Now, that wasn't a Christian author saying that. He's just the main researcher in this group. Their conclusion, and I quote, "Our nervous system is wired to find satisfaction by seeking the best for others. Caring for others brings healing for the caregiver." That's science. Generally speaking, we're blessed by blessing others. But specifically, when we carry the blessing of Christ to others, we receive a manifold blessing. Now, I know you've got up your defense. I told you to get it up. You're trying hard not to be inspired by this. I know. You're trying hard not to be moved into this. I'm saying I'm going to make it tough for you today and next Sunday. I want to encourage you to become involved in a ministry that takes 1 hour a month on Sunday afternoon, and then you go home and eat the dessert. I'm going to enlist you next Sunday. Be prepared. Be prepared. Pray with me.